Welcome to HER, the Health Equity and Reflection Podcast, an AMWA and C. Carter Fellowship production, where we hope to inform and uplift female changemakers in global health. This is a production of the Ann C. Carter Global Health Fellows. All views and opinions are those of the individuals and not AMWA itself. Thank you for tuning in to this fireside chat episode of HER, the Health, Equity, and Reflection Podcast. In this episode, you'll hear an interview with an inspirational leader in global health, their origins, current projects and initiatives, and advice that they'd give their younger self.
Good morning, everyone. For today's episode, we have a special treat for you all. This is our first fireside chat episode, and it is my absolute honor to introduce you to my global health inspiration, Dr. Julia Thoman. Dr. Thoman earned her medical degree from the University of Maryland, Baltimore, magna cum laude. She completed her residency in otolaryngology, head and neck surgery at Yale University, followed by her fellowship in facial plastic and reconstructive surgery under the mentorship of Dr. Edward Ferrier here at the University of South Florida, where she is now assistant professor and chief of the Division of Facial Plastics and Reconstructive Surgery. Dr. Thoman also holds positions as faculty mentor in the International Medicine Scholarly Concentration at USF, as ENT Interest Group Faculty Mentor, Women in Surgery Faculty Mentor. Dr. Thoman also recently obtained her Master's in Public Health, and in the global health world, maintains a relationship with the ENT Department at the Nelson Mandela School of Medicine and Nkosi Albert Luthuli Hospital in Durban, South Africa, which she began during her residency. Dr. Thoman's project supports educational exchange of ENT trainees and research development, and I was fortunate enough to travel to South Africa with her in 2021 to perform research in otolaryngology and get to meet all of the phenomenal surgeons and colleagues in the KZN region. Dr. Thoman is someone I aspire to be like when I grow up as a surgeon, as a mentor, as a global citizen, and as a human being. So Dr. Thoman, thank you so, so much for all that you've done for me and of course for agreeing to be on the show today.
Oh, Emily, it's an absolute pleasure and honor to be here.
So to start us off, if you don't mind, could you walk us through how you got started in global health and kind of where you how you got to where you are now?
Absolutely. I think, you know, when you talk to people about how they come into their careers, there's a lot of different ways to get somewhere. And so I think sometimes in sharing these stories, people feel like they have to follow a specific path. But I think that there's a lot of ways to get to what you want to do. For me in particular, I was always interested in sort of a broad scope for medicine. I had had the opportunity to travel a lot with my family when I was younger and really had the opportunity to see the world and to come to an appreciation of the differences of cultures and way of life. And so in entering medical school, that was something that continued to interest me, sort of in that service to a global population. I had my first opportunity to participate in an outreach actually during medical school. I was able to do a week and a summer between my first and second year with a group that was tied to a religious organization, but took students from the University of Maryland every year. And it was a very motivating experience. They had a very long-standing relationship and really, I think, focused on a lot of the tenets that I think are really important when you engage in these types of outreaches and relationships, because that's what they are. They're long-term relationships that have to be built over time. But it was really something that inspired me to continue on this journey. So in residency, it was something I specifically sought out, and I matched it at Yale, which didn't have a well-formulated opportunity at the time. There were a couple of volunteer faculty that went on various trips during the academic year. And so it really started there where I wanted to engage in something that was long-term and supported, and didn't find exactly what I was looking for at the time. And so decided to engage on sort of building what has been the foundation of my career moving forward.
When getting started, you kind of mentioned these tenets that you look for in programs and when you're trying to build relationships. Could you talk to us a little bit about what you think makes certain global health projects more impactful, or like what we should be looking for and focusing on when we're building out these projects?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the vast majority of these projects are undertaken with the absolute best intentions. The problems sometimes arise when those best intentions are sometimes directed in an unfortunate direction, or without really an appreciation of the environment in which they are undertaken. And so for me, the idea of mutual respect and a bilateral collaborative exchange has always been the central tenet of what I've undertaken. And so it really involves coming into a community as a learner and making these connections. And then we talk a lot about a reiterative needs assessment. So it's not my role as a true outsider to come in and say, this is what you must do to fix this problem that you have, because I don't truly understand, honestly, even after working in an environment for almost a decade, some of the is of practice or care, but really coming in with a great deal of humbleness of, I would love to learn, and I have a certain set of skills that I would love to put into the mix of opportunities to help. Are these of value to you? And in what way can they be of value to you? And engaging in this sort of reiterative conversation, and it's an ongoing evolution of a conversation. I think a lot of people look at these types of outreaches or relationships and it's, you know, we go every year and we do this. And a lot of times those are built on years of mutual respect. This idea that you can just sort of show up and operate and leave, which unfortunately is sometimes the perception about how especially surgical missions can happen. Something that I think is fraught with a lot of difficulty and really, I think, unfortunately promotes some of the ongoing, again, unintentional sort of paternalistic and colonialism that unfortunately gets tied into these things. And I think if we're going to really promote the development of global surgery, global outreach, humanitarianism, however you sort of want to frame it, we really have to be addressing this with sort of a mutual respect rather than what unfortunately gets tied up into some of these relationships of a hierarchical relationship where the person coming in from the outside is seen as maybe better at doing something. And really it's the people on the ground that know best how to care for their communities, and it should be a collegial experience.
Mm-hmm. And I know that when you and I talk about like the programs that we hope to collaboratively build and that sort of thing, we talk a lot about affordability and scalability and sustainability. Could you talk to me a little bit about what your process looks like for trying to build that in from the beginning, and how you then follow up with it as you continue to build programs?
Yeah, I think that it's really important not to commit some of the sins that we've committed in the past of showing up for a little bit while it's convenient. And then, you know, we all have busy lives, right? We have busy careers, we have families, et cetera. And unfortunately, these types of endeavors take a huge amount of time, energy, money, et cetera. And I think that making sure that you're prioritizing things at the beginning and being really open in your communication with your colleagues about what your goals are to accomplish, and continuing to be reiterative in that, you know, what are the ways you might want to pivot in a relationship if somebody has something that's going on? How are some ways that you can engage not just one individual, but a group of individuals so that it doesn't hinge on the personal endeavors of one person? You know, I think that in medicine and especially among surgeons, you know, there is a lot of I and a lot of sort of personhood wrapped up in some of these things. And I think taking that step back and realizing that it truly takes a village, a community on a global scale to address some of these healthcare concerns is really important if you want to create something that's sustainable. I think also being flexible about how that relationship manifests is really important. And I think COVID really highlighted that for us. We had developed a system where there was travel 2 to 4 times a year. There's a lot of importance placed in sort of a personal interaction and that trust that's engendered by honestly just showing up for years and being present is critical. But when you build on that foundation, when you have a time like COVID where personal travel is just impossible, being able to be flexible and pivoting to other areas of interest, like focusing on research instead of clinical care and continuing to build that relationship, really allows for resiliency in continuing a relationship.
I feel like, as I've learned trying to interview people and talk to people about global health, that flexibility is one of the biggest kind of continuity pieces, is that everybody has learned that they really have to be flexible. And as type A medical students and physicians who are very used to structure, having like a plan A, B, and C is something that has to be commonplace for you to get done what you need to get done. Are there any other or any examples of bumps in the roads that you've faced or times that you've had to pivot that you kind of could talk to us about, to talk us through your process and how you got through it and what your plan kind of was?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the adage of, you know, you make a plan and God laughs is quite true. But I like this because there's a beautiful South Africanism of make a plan. And the truth is that premise that even when you have a plan A, plan B, plan C, things inevitably go awry, and that flexibility of being able to be open-minded in how you determine your next steps, when it's not uncommon where you show up and the person you've planned to work for is suddenly on sabbatical, and or, you know, a hospital gets shut down because, you know, they don't have enough supplies, is very common. And I think there are sort of two avenues of approach. One is working within the system, but being very creative about it. And so one of the examples is, it's incredibly difficult to come up with ways to have clinical global health training within training programs, right? We have very short times in residency, despite the fact that residents will tell you it seems like forever. It is really a short period of time to gain a huge amount of knowledge and surgical skills. And so how are you flexible within that system? And so opportunities like developing research collaborations that help to work, again, within the system of research promotion with a global health slant. How do you then use these different pieces or different priorities in promoting this type of agenda? And then sometimes you work outside the system when necessary, obviously not breaking any rules, but, you know, looking outside of this framework that other people have created can be incredibly helpful in looking at things, you know, when a door is closed, you know, exit through the window, right? And you can usually find a way to come together on something that you couldn't have even imagined how it was going to work out. And somehow it always does. But yes, convincing people who are type A, who have all their lives checked the boxes they were meant to check, and then tossing them into a opportunity to learn about being flexible is really scary for a lot of people. But I think it's also a really important learning opportunity, whether you engage in global health for the rest of your career or you're just taking care of people. Because, you know, in medicine, our patients aren't in tidy little boxes with, you know, perfect little life stories. It's messy. Life is messy. Patient care is messy. Careers are messy. And learning to sort of roll with those punches, as it were, and creating that flexibility really creates, I think, a resiliency in practice that I think is really an important life lesson that I definitely have learned along the way. Because I came into this as a, you know, type A surgeon who was like, I don't understand. We're leaving in 2 days and we don't have these 10 things. And then you get on the ground and somehow it all just works out. And it's really difficult to convince people of that, but it happens. It's sort of like a little bit of magic.
Mm-hmm. I think that I was, first of all, I'm very glad that Make a Plan made its way into this because I was hoping that it would. It was one of the kind of things that I learned, I took away the most from my time in South Africa because I am very type A. And like Dr. Toman was explaining, something would go completely awry and somebody would just say, oh, we'll make a plan, basically saying it'll get done. And it always did. And it was very impressive. But again, to your point, I also think that part of medicine being so black and white and so structured, and then the having to make a plan and all of those sorts of things also teaches us to kind of listen to our patients a little bit more and take some time to realize that like patients really are the best doctors and they know themselves the best. And the same goes for global health. The local people, the people that you're working with, your collaborators really know the system the best, the things the best, and they can help you find ways to be creative. So trying to build that in and being intentional about listening and that kind of thing, taking a backseat is kind of a good thing to remember as us type A structured humans go into the world to kind of do this kind of work.
Absolutely.
So we've kind of gone through how you got here. Could you talk to us a little bit about what your practice looks like now? Like your local practice here in Tampa and then your global practice and how you kind of tie them together. And that sort of thing.
Absolutely. It's a little bit complicated. and I've certainly been accused on more than one occasion of being a square peg fit into a round hole. But I think it gets back to something I said at the beginning of our conversation, which is there's a lot of ways to get to where you want to go. And so My background in training and the focus of my clinical practice here at the University of South Florida is really focused primarily on facial plastics and reconstructive surgery. It was the fellowship that I did, and it's been an amazing opportunity over the last 4 years to develop a really thriving academic practice focusing on those clinical care aspects. But I also have a passion for hearing health and hearing healthcare and access into health, which is not an issue just sort of outside of the borders of the United States. I think that that's a common criticism, actually, of international outreach efforts, is there's a huge amount of underserved populations right in our own backyard. And for me, taking those lessons learned from colleagues in other settings, sometimes resource challenged settings, because I have plenty of patients even here in the US who are resource challenged, and how do you work with those patients is really informative. So I take a lot of those lessons that I learned in participating in global outreach into my own practice. And then I'm really fortunate to have a chair that supports my continued global mission. It's good for the department. It's good for the university. It's good for training. Like we talked about, like having people think outside of the box and get out of these, you know, tidy guardrails that we place on medical training, because once those guardrails are off, there's no other guardrails that go back on. And so having those opportunities is really important, but finding that melding of clinical practice along with teaching and research missions for me has been a really nice way to create some cohesiveness in where, you know, on the surface, it seems like there's a lot of chaos. There's a little bit of method behind some of the madness. And I think that one of the most important things that I have learned on this journey of being an early career academic person is there's a lot of competing interests, a lot of competing elements that are gonna pull on your time, and creating priorities, but also finding ways to connect things that maybe on the surface don't look like they connect, but really can draw together through either teaching or research missions has been really helpful in developing my career.
What advice on that note do you have for those of us who are even earlier in our career and hoping to build this in? What kind of experiences should we be looking for now? What advice do you have for us, especially women? I feel like women in global health and women in medicine have an even more unique experience these days. So what advice would you give to us to kind of get going on our own path?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, Women, I think, in medicine still face some unique challenges. It would be sort of the height of sticking our heads in the sand to say otherwise. But there are challenges for everyone in this sort of changing landscape. And I think that, in the past, the advice was, find someone you want to be like and sort of do what they do and be their shadow. And I think that there have definitely been some people along my path that have supported me in a way that really helped to put my career forward. But I also think that I've had the opportunity to borrow from successes that a wide number of people have had. And I think sort of trying on what different people have tried and been successful is important, because sometimes that'll work for you and sometimes it won't work for you. I remember in medical school, I initially wanted to be a trauma surgeon. And so I went to a lecture being given by a faculty member who was a young woman faculty who had recently taken on the post of being in charge of the residency. And I remember her talking about how she was making her career work, and it was regimented. It was, I was already married by the time I entered residency. I knew that I was gonna, I wanted to start a family. So we, got pregnant in my research year, and we can, talk about the family planning aspects and the use of research time, et cetera. We could hold a whole podcast on how women can think about, child rearing within a career, which is sort of outside of the scope of this. But I remember thinking, like, man, this woman has a plan and I don't have that much of a plan. And so, but it started me thinking about things that are like, oh, if this is important to me, I need to think about this. And then there's also elements where I was like, I can't make that much of a plan. That's not where I am in my life. And so I'm going to borrow some of what she did, but who's someone else that I can look towards that I think have also had successes? And I think talking to people about how they have developed their career, and it was amazing to me as I talked to people of both genders about, how they ended up where they were and in what I thought was a very successful way, they usually ended up in it sort of backwards, like not something they intended to do, and sort of found themselves in an opportunity and said yes to an opportunity. And that really, I think, was ultimately one of the most important lessons that I learned, was be open to opportunities as they present themselves. It may not be what you initially thought you were going to do, but sometimes that opportunity is being presented to you for a reason. And there are ways to take that opportunity and grow that opportunity in a way that you never even envisioned, and you make a plan.
So now we've looked back and we know where you are now. So looking forward, what are kind of some next goals that you have for yourself in this next kind of chapter of your career? From mentoring students to facilitating research and inspiring future students across the globe, kind of what are your next goals for yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. It feels like you are never really settled. And I think that that's one of the most important things, is there's always an area to grow. And I think not becoming sort of complacent in where you are and continuing to be mindful of your priorities. And so, my priority is to continue to grow the opportunities of global surgery and global health outreach, and creating a space for people to continue to participate in those opportunities. I think from around the globe is really my goal. I think that we have slowly developed in the US training system opportunities, but I think my next goal is to ensure that we're being as equitable as possible when we engage with our global health partners in providing opportunities for our collaborators to fully participate in these types of collaborations. And so my next steps are really trying to find ways for our collaborators to come to the US and, engage in that level of equity. We travel there. I think that having the opportunity to travel here is an amazing opportunity, and we've made some small forays into that. This past year, we were able to support some audiology trainees from Malawi that I had the opportunity to mentor through a research project and have them come and present at a national level meeting and come and spend some time with us in the clinic at USF. And that's been sort of this next step in the journey of creating equity within these types of relationships.
Mm-hmm. As you've mentioned partnerships a lot, I think that a lot of the success in global health comes from the clinical aspects, but a lot of the most impactful things that I experienced in South Africa came from kind of what I've been referring to as like the in-between moments, like chatting with people over coffee or outside of the hospital and those sorts of things. What do you think, how do you make those relationships so special, and how do you continue to cultivate them while you're in the US and make sure that you stay in contact with people?
Yeah, I think staying in contact is really, really the most important thing. And this is it's sort of a soft skill that you are not taught in medical school. And I actually have to credit my partner, Dr. Zach Porterfield, for really teaching me on this one, is those in-between moments of just sort of showing up and saying hello and saying how nice it is to see somebody again. You are seeing them again. You keep showing up and you're tenacious and humble about just wanting to connect with somebody is really what drives the trust that I think makes these types of relationships possible and successful. And, you know, you don't go into something with a goal necessarily of I'm going to, you know, extract a promise for go in. You just say, hey, it's so great to see you. What's going on with you right now? You know, we talked about this the last time we saw each other. How is that going? Anything I can do to help you with that? Or here's an idea you might try. And then not pushing people for something. Really, these things work when it's intentional but organic. And it does take time. I think trying to explain to people sometimes who are outside of this field the importance of just being present can be a challenge, but really the doors open not on day one because you come from a fancy institution or you have a fancy title. They open because you've been present for 5, 10 years, and you continue to do what you say you're going to do. I know that's one of the things that's the other, I think, important thing to highlight is when you say you're going to do something, you really need to do it, because otherwise the path of international collaboration is littered with sort of broken promises. I think not out of any malice, but just because people get busy. And so being intentional in keeping the promises that you make is critical in ensuring these long lasting relationships.
I love that phrase of the intentional, organic piece of it all. I think that goes back to the flexibility and the listening. So a great way to wrap up kind of everything we've talked about. One of my favorite things is to listen to people talk about things that they care about. So I kind of want to give you the platform now to just talk about some of your favorite pieces, either of your work or about global health in general and your career, if you wouldn't mind sharing that with us.
Absolutely. I think that there are so many different ways to achieve what you want to achieve. And I think that one of the most important lessons that I learned is try actually not to be too dogmatic about how you're going to get somewhere. I think having a priority and having goals is really important, because if you don't have a goal, you don't really know what you're looking towards. But sometimes those goals can change, and being flexible about how those things change is really important. I think the other thing that's been incredibly formative for me in engaging in these types of endeavors is a lot of doors close, right? A lot of people, the automatic knee-jerk answer to you when you ask for something is no. And I think one of the most important things that I learned early on was that no is just an opening offer. Right? It's no to how you've said it this time, but it's not necessarily no because it's a bad idea. It's no because they didn't have time to listen to you right now. It's no because you know, there are constraints that you're unaware of, like, you know, somebody has to be present for something, or there's no insurance to do this, or how are we going to get funding, or they somehow think they're going to be responsible. And instead, it's no isn't the final answer. It's no to what you've put on the table right now, which is an opportunity for you to reflect about, is this important enough for you to fight this battle? And if it is, what are some ways to help communicate around that no that can get you to the end goal of what you want to achieve? And so being flexible and creative is really one of the most important lessons of how can you work within the system, a little outside the system, and really find a way to engage on what feeds you, right? This mm-hmm. job of the practice of medicine is hard. And finding ways to feed what inspires you to take care of people, whether it's, you know, in the clinic that you go to every day, whether it's in an international setting, whether it's, you know, your family members who inevitably call you with something that is way outside of your area of expertise. But finding those moments where you can feel like you've made a difference and given back to a community, and that for me, I think, really sort of feeds what I continue to do, because sometimes it's sort of overwhelming and it feels like the barriers in your way are insurmountable. Mm-hmm. And I think taking a breath, finding people in your life that support you, that you can talk to about these things. And then remember, no is just that opening offer.
Thank you so much for that, Dr. Toman. There were so many pearls of wisdom in this talk today, and I know that I and everybody else listening will get so much out of it. We really appreciate you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us today, and we wish you the best of luck on all of your future endeavors in global health and in medicine.
Well, thank you, Emily. I have been truly impressed by your passion, and it's been an absolute privilege to get to talk to you.
Thank you so much.